Well, good evening and welcome to a very special edition of the Card Subject to Change podcast. Joining us tonight, joining me along with Stripes Chris Angle is a very special guest, courtesy of wrestling.com. We have the man himself, Nick Houseman. Nick of Wrestling Incorporated. You may know him as well from Wrestling Inc., but for House of Wrestling as well. Nick, thank you for joining us, taking time out of your busy schedule to talk wrestling with some booger eaters.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate it. Yeah, allhouseofwrestling.com now, everybody. Please come on over to the party. We had a big exclusive today about Goldberg and Sting and this possible match in Jerusalem. So houseofwrestling.com, check it out. But guys, I am so excited. Happy to be here today. Card subject to change. Anything's possible. We're going to make some magic here today. I'm excited about it.
That's right. We're excited to have you on. We're just a bunch of guys that kind of hang around, you know, talk about pro wrestling. We want to kind of learn about you a little bit today, Nick Houseman. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, I know, you know, we got the House of Wrestling brand new podcast going on. Let's hear a little bit about yourself.
Oh, well, I live here on the north side of Chicago. I'm about a 20-minute walk from Wrigley Field, the lake, the Lincoln Park Zoo. I live in one of the most beautiful parts in the world with my wife, and we have a little beagle named Willow. And when I'm not doing pro wrestling stuff, that's largely that's what occupies the rest of my life is that little unit right there. So I like drinking craft beer. I smoke some weed from time to time. and... You know, I like to watch pro wrestling just like everybody else in pro wrestling. I'm just like everybody else. I just get to be in the pit after shows and ask questions from time to time. So there you go.
Hey, when you're this age and you're a pro wrestling fan, you've come to terms with it and you're open with it. And that's a great thing to be. But I'm going to take you back to being a fan. You're obviously in the business and have been for quite some time. Take your journalist hat off here for a little bit and put your fandom hat on. Talk about how wrestling caught fire with you. What made you become a pro wrestling fan way back when you were a little Nick Houseman, or maybe it hasn't been that long?
Well, I was a real nerdy little kid. You know, I lived in a very small town called the Woodlands, Texas. It's actually a very big town now for anybody familiar with the Texas area. When I grew up there, was just really largely like, I think we had two strip malls and some churches. And so, you know, I was just like every little kid in the South. You go to your grandma's house, you're watching what's on TV upstairs, wrestling was happening on. I can't remember if it was WCW or WWF I came across first, but it was early. Like, I was watching both. I mean, I'm 38. So as soon as I could register like memories, Monday Night Raw started and I was watching it. So I remember like Raw from the early days. And I remember WCW Saturday nights on TBS. I remember Hulk Hogan signing with WCW and Randy Savage showing up for no effing reason on an hour long free television program, non-paper. Like, what's going on here? You know? All that stuff that I look back on and I'm like, man, if I was thinking now, like I did then, I'd look at the business differently. But at the time, you know, I was a kid who just enjoyed it. I took in as much pro wrestling as I could. I loved it.
You got one match or one show, Nick, that tripped the trigger for you. You go back and think about now, like, man, that was the match that got me in. Maybe that was the storyline that got me involved with wrestling.
Well, I mean, I definitely remember. I definitely remember being just like all the other kids where it was not, you know, of an age. I remember being I'm 38, so put it all the numbers together. But I remember being a kid and like before the Monday Night Wars, you were like, oh, I'm a wrestling fan. You know, it was like, it was okay. And like, I'm from the sticks of Texas, so it actually wasn't that stigmatized. Honestly, I wasn't like weird about it, but it was, you know, you had your little group of friends that watch wrestling or whatever. But then when Steve Austin starts taking off, the NWO shows up, you start having to like, make sure you're going to see, you know, I definitely remember Scott Hall showing up and then Kevin Nash the next week. And me and my brother were just like, what is happening? WWF is legitimately taking over this other, we like thought it was real, right? We thought it was like actually happening,
right?
And you know, I would probably say that that was the thing that I was a fan before that, but it definitely, you know, getting to ride that wave of the Monday Night War, certainly, you know, anyone who did, right? We all have our scars. You know, if you weren't there, you missed it, man. But yeah, definitely. I think that was probably what took it over the top for me, like a lot of people.
Now you're wearing a Blockbuster shirt, so I know you know what Blockbuster is. And when take you back to young Nick Hausman, when you walked into Blockbuster Video, what was the tape that you were looking for, and what drew you to that tape?
Well, first of all, I am wearing a Blockbuster. It's a Blockbuster hoodie. My wife got it for me. It's from the last Blockbuster on Earth. She ordered it because we watched the documentary, so it's very cool. We did eventually have a Blockbuster, but I don't want to put Blockbuster over because Blockbuster put my video store, Take One Video, out of business. Oh. So,
well, yeah. So any video store is good.
No, I just
we got some sour grape. We got some sour grapes here.
Yeah, I wanted to bury them a little bit. I didn't want you being like Hausman loves Blockbuster. I am wearing the hoodie though. So anyway, no. When I would walk into the video store, obviously you're shooting for the pro wrestling rack. You know, I'm looking for weird stuff, right? I'm looking for like WCW Uncensored, right? Like Three Cages of Doom, you know,
yes.
Dustin Rhodes, Blacktop Bully on the back of an 18-wheeler, oh, yes, right? Yeah. Buried Alive matches, Inferno, like the weirder the better, right? Like this whole thing now where I'm an adult and I have to be like, a great match is one you believe, and that is filled with wrestling. And I'm like, I don't know, man. Right. I don't know. I'm into the weird over the top stuff. That was where my eyes gravitated when I was a kid going to the wrestling store, the wrestling tapes.
Very cool.
I guess. Thank you. I didn't feel that way.
Nick, are you there? Oh, I think that's all right. Fine. We're just gonna go on.
We're live.
So now when you like I said, when you went into that store and you had those weird, obscure tapes that you were looking for, was there one that stuck out to you just because, like, of the just the graphics, like the videotape itself, the artwork? That's one thing we like to talk about here. The artwork. What kind of is your favorite artwork on those obscure tapes?
Sure. I remember I loved the Caesar's Palace WrestleMania ones. I thought the whole riding camels again. I liked the pageantry,
right? Yeah,
you know, setting the stage for a life of whatever it is that I do. But yes, I loved that aesthetic. I liked SummerSlam 90. 92 was Brett, right? Brett and
yes.
Davey.
Yep.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
And I really love. I thought that was such a cool. I mean, and just the visual, right? Of the stadium, all these people, it felt so big. Like Bulldog felt like such a big deal on that show.
Bigger than life. Huge.
Huge. Yeah. So I loved Summer. I thought that if I'm thinking about that, as far as like the WWE ones, anything Mick Foley, Undertaker, you know, the Buried mm-hmm. Alive stuff. Those,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Those covers were the ones that always grabbed me.
Those are very cool. Now yeah. You have been in and around professional wrestling for about 15 years or more. And you originally were a professional wrestling manager. Was that up in Chicago itself or?
It was. Yeah.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about that.
You did a half ounce of research. I appreciate that. Yes. I used to be an independent wrestling manager named Ronaldo Piven here in Chicago. Okay. And we were like, Stripes and I were talking off air as we were getting ready. And you came up in the Iowa.
Yes, independent Midwest. Yep.
Midwest, right? You said you came up here to see Chicago. So we probably, like, we may have been at shows and stuff, Stripes. We may have met each other.
Could have. Yeah. I mean, I've done shows with IWA Mid-South, you know. Nope, Ian Rotten. No, a couple of those.
Everything I heard about IWA Mid-South terrified me. I didn't seek it out. I've never sought out. I've heard how much Punk loved it. And like everybody, you know, there's like a cult there. I don't know, man.
It was awesome. I do have stories. I mean, oh my gosh. I once almost watched New Jack kill somebody one night. It was bad. But I mean, this isn't about me. I mean,
this is a good conversation because like, because I don't really want to talk out of turn, because like one of my best friends is this guy, Marcus Crane, rest in peace.
I know Marcus. I was a good friend with him too. Yeah.
Wonderful. See, again, Stripes, we may have hung out together at some point.
We might have.
But Marcus, like, was like this crazy death match, and I have no idea how he became one of my very good friends. We'd hang out here in Chicago. We'd go to Replay up the street and grab drinks and stuff all the time. And we got to promote some shows here in Chicago. I've done, like, I can promote on maybe two hands the amount of shows I'd stamp and say Nick Houseman helped produce this wrestling show.
Right.
All right.
Right.
But three of them were with Marcus. And the first one, never forget, my wife, my now wife, then girlfriend, she's like sitting up in the balcony, and Marcus, this was Viva La Wrestling. We've got the ring down on the floor, and it's not a very big venue. Like, I think maybe 100 people standing, no chairs, definitely 100 people, maybe 150 ringside. And then my wife, then girlfriend, is up top, and we get to the main event. He wants to do this, Malort deathmatch gimmick. And he gets all the light tubes out. He smashed one of the light tubes, and this big chunk of fluorescent light tube glass flies into this girl's drink ringside, right?
Oh, no.
And everyone goes, oh. And she looks at it, and she pulls it out. Everyone goes, ah. And she throws it, and then she chugs the beer, and everyone goes, yeah. my wife, she married me after this experience, right? Like,
that's a keeper right there.
You know, like, I don't under, I, you know, but that's the thing is, I'm fine. Then I think IWA Miss South, and I'm like, those dudes are nuts. I don't know that I want to go over there, you know? Anyway,
the cool thing about IWA Miss South is, I, you know, everybody has their opinions about Ian Rotten and everything, but I thought the one thing cool about IWA Mid South is they kept most of their hardcore stuff until the end. So you kind of knew what you were getting at the end of the show, and you know, cleanup was a lot easier, obviously. Sure. But yeah, I that's crazy that you know Marcus, because Marcus and I go way back. I used to manage a group here in the Iowa called the Sinners. It was Stephen Youngblood, Nevin Knoxville, a bunch of other guys, and Marcus actually was our one of our little groupies, roadies, and he was a heck of a guy. He was excellent.
What a trooper, right? Yeah, who knows? Maybe we kicked each other in the balls at some point at like a biker
maybe
festival or something at some point. I mean, that whole period, like, yeah. Seriously, that whole period is just like such a chaotic blur to me. You know, like, I can't get off the, like, if I'm not being motivated, usually financially, to get off the couch, right. I'm not doing jack shit on a weekend, right? That's my time, all right?
Yeah, of course.
To look back on all of the things that I did in my 20s, where it was like catching trains and carpooling and going to towns and, you know, hitting three spots on a weekend. Man, that seems like a lot now. I don't want to do that. That sounds awful, Stripes.
Yeah.
That? Gross.
Now that we're in our 30s, you know, almost 40 now, gotta sit home, relax.
No, thank you, sir. That is not what I am interested in.
Not anymore. Nope.
No, it was dumb. But no, I had a great time as a manager. I was Ronaldo Piven. Mm-hmm. I most notably worked for Pro Wrestling Blitz. That was the bulk of, I guess, my career. I told whole stories in Blitz. I worked with Billy Corgan in Resistance Pro Wrestling when that was a thing. That's wild. We can talk about that if you want, whatever you want to hear about that. Let's see. I worked Dave Hero up at GLCW. You know, I everybody in the Midwest, Proving Ground Pro Wrestling. I shouldn't say everybody. Never worked for Dreamwave. Never worked for AAW. I did business with Freelance, but not as Piven. I helped them get their venue, and I was like kind of the general manager for the first year of their promotion, but whatever.
Okay. Okay.
Yep. That was weird. Yep. Ba-da-bam.
Hey, I put some coins back into my computer and my internet's
ding, ding,
working.
There we go.
Ding, 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 ding.
I have like an arcade set up here. I'm sure you guys have touched on so much. I don't want to rehash anything you guys talked about. But yeah, I know one thing I wanted to ask you, Nick, as being, you know, a wrestling journalist and into it. How jaded are you, you know, when it comes to you're a wrestling fan, but you got a job to do, like, is there a point where you got jaded and you're jaded no more, or maybe it happens and goes away. How do you deal with that?
I think I'm over the hump, right? Like, I think I'm over the hump. I think I became the most jaded I'd been towards the business maybe 2 years ago, if I'm being completely honest. And it was the height. It was the height of the speaking out movement. And there was, you know, again, like, as a journalist, I don't know that I'd necessarily call myself that, but for the sake of brevity, let's call me a journalist. That kind of is what I do. I had to go talk to all of these people as I'm vetting these stories, as I'm trying to, like, make sure that what I'm running on news sites is not wild speculation or misleading or litigious or whatever, right? So I'm talking to people that are that are doing accusing. So these people that have been through trauma, right, and abuse,
sure, right,
and they don't always want to be on the record, right? Like, honestly, I would say none of the there's except for Chris Levin, who was a referee for Impact Wrestling, who came to me, and so he came to me with this story about Impact internal investigation into sexual harassment, all that. Just Google Chris Levin Wrestling Inc. There's a whole thing, you can read it, find out for yourself. Oddly enough, Chris was then a victim of the speaking out movement. What a great person to be the one to come forward in that particular way. But anyway, no, none of the people I was talking to that were, like, had been victims really wanted to go on the record. Then you got to go talk to people that are being accused and are like, hey, always a dude. I don't think I ever went to a woman and was like, hey, you've been outed. I was always a dude, and it was always like, hey, do you want to go? Do you want to make a comment on this? Do you want to go on the record? Do you want to say anything? Do you want to? And it's very contentious. And so, like, the, you know, going down those rabbit holes, particularly at that time, and finding out as much unfortunate, literally the darkest side of the ring, you know, not even like what you see on TV, not even close, right? Like, you're just like, wow. And some of these people are still walking around, you know, because I can't report about it,
right?
And these people don't want to go put their name out there. So it's just like, you work with this knowledge of, okay, well, we all know this person's a weirdo, but I guess politically nobody's going to say anything because they're all terrified. Okay. So that's something that, you know, really can weigh on you and still weighs on me. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But then you kind of get to this place where you have to do like so many other people that are in a position of being wronged here. And you have to do what you can do to get through and hopefully leave a better path behind you than exists in the moment. And that's all you can really hope to do. And that kind of mentality has really helped me get through that jadedness. And I also took about 6 weeks completely off the grid, where I turned off my phone and everything and just completely vanished a little after January. That's very good, too. But that's kind of how I got over the hump. I'm very excited to cover pro. I always love covering pro wrestling, but I'm more excited about the business. And there's a lot of positive stuff going on right now. But like everything, there's, you know, there's certainly that underbelly there that's not so great either.
Yeah, you're always going to have positives and negatives with kind of anything you ever, you know, really do. So let's kind of flip over to the positive side of wrestling. Now you've partnered with a new streaming network, Premier Streaming Network, who is co-owned by none other than Freddie Prinze Jr., which we know Freddie there. Yep, there it is. Which Freddie was a writer for the WWE. Very, very good plug. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved with Premier Streaming Network and kind of what you do for them with the House of Wrestling.
Thank you for asking. I am very good friends with Josh Chernoff, who's one of the other co-owners of Premier Streaming Network. And when I left Wrestling Inc., or parted ways with Wrestling Inc., whatever you want to say, it was definitely a time where I had anything, I could really kind of do anything I wanted. And I had decided I was going to work on a platform, and I had had a friend of mine suggest that I work with Premier Streaming Network to kind of do the first run rights for my show, because like there'd be interest in things. Before I could reach out to them, they reached out to me because they had found out that I was back on the market. And it was really pretty easy. Like, I got to meet, I hooked up with Josh. I got to meet his partners, Paul Owen and Fred, his brother, mm-hmm. sure enough. All awesome guys, very smart. Everybody compliments each other very well in good ways. Yeah. We put together a deal, and I was two shows a week, Tuesday, Thursday, noon Eastern. You can go check out the show, PremierStreamingNetwork.com or watch on Premier.com. And it's great. I welcome notable names from the world of pro wrestling journalism. We've already had on Sean Ross Sapp, Dave Meltzer, Wade Keller, Kenny McIntosh from Inside the Ropes, Brandon Thurston, everybody. So I love to talk to the people that are breaking the stories that are the you hear, oh, Dave Meltzer said this. Well, why don't I just get Dave Meltzer here? Why don't I just get Dave? What?
Hear it straight from the horse's mouth.
And then I know my stuff. I know what I hear, right? Because Stripes, again, we're around the business. So you get to hear things that normals don't hear. And then I get to go, well, I don't know, man. Dave, I agree with that. Maybe I don't know about that. Maybe there's this. Did you know that? Can I get your reaction here to that? And play that game. So that's what I get to do twice a week over at House of Wrestling on Premier Streaming Network. And so I'm off. I'm like, good. I'm like, yeah, this is great. And then one day I get a call from Paul Owen. I think he's I don't know if he's president. I don't know what the order. I don't know what the power structure is there. But Paul calls me. He's like, hey, Nick, we just wanted, because you're part of the family, we wanted you to know before it breaks in like an hour, everybody's going to know. Freddie Prinze Jr. is now co-owner of Premier Streaming Network. And I was like, what? Kiss me?
You're like, wait a minute.
She's all that? Freddie Prinze.
Scooby-Doo?
Scooby-Doo? Freddie Prinze Jr.? Yeah, man. It's happening. It's going down. And so I got a little bit of a heads up, and they rolled it out. And look, could not be happier. All three of those guys, Paul, Josh, Fred, particularly Josh and Paul. Fred has a business background, but Paul and Josh, they understand this streaming space better than anybody. The experience with Fight. Paul's also worked with the WWE Network. Couldn't be happier. Great content. Everybody, Tuesday, Thursday, head on over to Premier Streaming Network. Check out House of Wrestling. We have a blast. I'd love for you all to join us. Wonderful time.
Very cool. So we talked about earlier about what you liked when you were a kid. What do you like nowadays? I mean, nowadays when you want to, you know, turn on wrestling, obviously not for work, maybe something that you just want to get in there and watch yourself just for fun. What do you kind of go to in today's market?
I mean, I'm really digging what WWE is doing right now. Honestly, I like some of what AEW is doing as well. I would be lying if I say I love the whole four pillars thing going on in the main event, a little ham fisted, whatever. But I think with WWE right now, they're just kind of leveling up. You know,
they're running all cylinders,
dude. Every cylinder. The next 3 months are going to be fascinating television for the business on both ends, WWE and AEW. But I think that, you know, what we're realizing now with Vince largely out of the way is that he was holding the company back. In every metric now, it's like obvious Vince was kind of holding it back. And Hunter sitting here going, man, dude, if I could just, what's it gonna take? Give me the ball, let me run. And then he got it and he ran with it, man. I love the idea of taking these shows that had become such throwaway shows, the Backlash, Chamber, these non-big four tent pole shows. I won't throw Money in the Bank because I think Money in the Bank has become kind of a tent pole show, but the other ones, all these non-tent pole shows have become just such fodder. Why not just say, hey, F it. We're going to go do this one in Italy. F it. We're going to do this one in Japan.
Some random place. Yeah.
Yeah, because you can continue storylines, like the Bloodline was still continued in Puerto Rico. Roman didn't need to be there, but that storyline was still progressed, right?
Yeah.
Cody could get his mojo back, but you can also do these like specified segments and hype for the shows to complement it and make it feel different. You know, Shinsuke is getting rolled again, right? Let's be honest. He's going to be lucky to be in the mid-card title picture here in 3 weeks. But if they decide to do WWE, I don't know, what's the other B show? Let's say Elimination Chamber. In Japan, I would have to think they're going to probably take Shinsuke, shine him up a little bit, and give him a chance to do something big. And look at what happened to Damian Priest in Puerto Rico. That guy's going to getting pushed differently on the other side of it.
Yep.
More guys, especially as international talent, getting it, like Drew McIntyre. They did it at Clash with him in Europe. Now he's thinking about walking. He's like, I am way too over for what you guys want to do with me after that shit. Honestly, you know? So anyway,
and I think that magic in a bottle was just so magical in Puerto Rico because they haven't been there for 18 years, and you know, they were clamoring for something just to, you know, come to their area so they can actually, you'll see it face to face.
Yeah, exactly. And those fans are hot, and that helps the show too, right? And having those fans be so hot, I mean, it's just so over the top. It's great. Just a good vibe. Good television.
I think we got Nick back. Nick, were you there?
Yeah. They don't take pennies. They don't take pennies with this internet, so I had to go cash them in for some nickels.
Wow.
Ding, 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 ding. I was listening to a show of yours the other day, Nick, and you posed the question about, you know, how'd you feel with the Cody Roman ending of WrestleMania? And I didn't quite hear your whole take on it, but I think I'm in the minority on this one. I was happy with the way they went with it.
Okay.
I felt Cody had been given everything up to that point, correct? Like, that was Cody's first loss since he had been back. I know he was on the shelf with the injury and stuff, but I think they did the right thing. And I think when you're that close to 1,000 days, they're going to go for 1,000, right?
I mean, I don't know that it's about that. I don't think the 1,000-day thing is just a thing. I think it's a red herring. The only reason I think that they would keep this belt on Roman Reigns is if they think there's like an 80% chance they could still make this match with The Rock happen. You know, if they're 3 years into this thing now, what's another year, right? Like, we needed something. We knew Dwayne couldn't do it this year. He could do it at 40, but we got to do something to get us over the hump here. Who is willing to do this business? Enter Cody Rhodes, right? And I think Cody did exactly what they wanted to do. If they don't do the Rock match, I think there will be a lot of looking back booking, because if it is the Roman win is good if it results in something meaningful, right? If it results in, you know,
correct,
him, if it results in him beating The Rock and then somebody beating him, and then they can say, I beat not just Roman, I beat everybody Roman ever beat, right? I'm better than all of those people, whatever it could be,
right?
Fine. If they don't do that, then they really, I'm going to show my real rednecky here. They screwed the pooch, my friends, because there is money on the table. There's still there was just a huge, epic size pile of money on the table there for Cody Rhodes' win. You couldn't have printed the amount of T-shirts that guy would have sold coming off that title win. I mean, it had been overstock, out of stock, all, you know, every stock for Cody Rhodes merchandise. Guaranteed big money. So if they didn't take that, they better have a damn good reason. If not, there is going to be some finger pointing here, I think, before it's all said and done.
Do you think that the Rock match will actually happen personally?
Yeah,
I know me personally, I don't think it will happen.
I totally think it happens. I thought he was going to be at the Rumble. What didn't happen? Then this, I'm like, I think they're going to ride this thing till the wheels come off, man. Look, they want this match. I think Dwayne is dangling that carrot. I think they're getting really close to eating that carrot. I really think that carrot's getting close. Why would he do the tease on Young Rock? Why would they do all the back and forth? I mean, there's so much there for the sake of the business. Maybe it was, you know, because they knew the Endeavor deal was going down. They didn't want to blow it out. Now, we're going to have to do the first WrestleMania under Endeavor's leadership. Correct me if I'm wrong. Dwayne The Rock Johnson is signed to William Morris Endeavor, which is part of Endeavor. That's their talent management company. Yep. I'm sure they would love to showcase Dwayne at their first WrestleMania. WrestleMania 40, big round number versus Roman Reigns, first $1 billion box office attraction bout of all time. I think that's what they want. And I think they've got all their chips on that match happening. I think it'll happen.
You know what? The way you put it, it actually sounds like it's going to happen. I mean, you convinced me, Nick.
A fantastic salesperson. I used to sell walk-in bathtubs. Can you believe that?
No, I know. No, we're talking a little bit about the bloodline and anything. We've talked about this before. To your knowledge, has there been anything, any time of a story that has been this drawn out, this elaborate of this bloodline story that we've gotten to witness?
I mean, you got to go back to NWO, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where, I mean, it was, you know, 5-8 times the amount of people involved, right? But the kind of central idea that, you know, you've got this group, Hulk Hogan kind of assumes that Roman Reigns spot. You got your Nash and your Hall and your Waltman and all these other characters. Sami Zayn, I guess 100 people played the role of Sami Zayn in the NWO.
Right.
It was sloppily done, though. They didn't know how to tell that mm-hmm. story, right? It was mm-hmm. them versus everybody. They got lost, didn't have a finish. I'd like to think that they know eventually how this bloodline thing's going to end, but they've done such a great job of not involving too many people, like big mistake of the NWO. They've done a great job of protecting people, which they didn't do at the NWO.
No.
And, you know, they're just slowly taking this one step at a time. And I think, you know, looking at the bigger picture, that kind of the international expansion they're doing these specialized shows, you know, like I said, a Nakamura backlash doesn't make a lot of sense, but you put Nakamura in Japan, maybe he does get the rub of getting to work a main event program with Roman Reigns. Even if he comes up short, you know, again, that Drew McIntyre effect, you bring so many people into your circle that are rooting for you. They did it with Sami Zayn in Canada. This is what they do now, right? They go to a market, they find a talent, they heat them up, they either put them in a match with Roman or they put them in some kind of other specialized match, like they did it in Puerto Rico, which was wonderful. They're finding the right formula. I think it's a good one, though, you know?
And I think that's been the major appeal for the bloodline is you're not adding too many elements to kind of construe the pot, make it to where it's so watered down that you don't know what's going on left or right. I think that's where the NWO kind of, like you said, got out of control was they were adding everybody. They got Red and Black. They had the LWO. They had everybody. They, you know, but
can you imagine if Jimmy's like, me and Jay, we're going to be bloodline green. Okay. And so like, we're still bloodline. Okay. But like Solo, he can't be BG. All right. He can't beat BLG. We're BLG, and then Sammy's BLG, but he's not bloodline. He's just BLG, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Confusing
yep.
Fuck all would be awful. So yes.
It's terrible.
Awful.
Now I know we were talking about the bloodline and anything like that, and you said, you know, you follow a little bit of Impact and other things like that. What about AEW? What do you think's going on with AEW, and what is the four pillars and the Sting issue? You know, what do you think that about AEW right
as well? I actually said I don't watch Impact. I do watch AEW. So I just
I'm sorry.
Preface how wonky that setup was. No, I do have thoughts on AEW. The four pillars match to me just a bit a little wonky. You know, I've heard that Max has a lot of say in his creative backstage, maybe more mm-hmm. than his creative, but specifically his creative. I think that Max is kind of literally maybe doing whatever he wants at this very moment. It feels to me like Tony has a plan for Wembley with Max mm-hmm. and just kind of said, figure it out for this one, because like this thing has been tough to watch for me. The promos, Max is fine. I don't think, and like, again, you've been around the independents for a long time. Max, to me, feels like a top independent heel. He doesn't feel yet to me like a top heel for like a major wrestling promotion. There's just, mm-hmm. it doesn't, there's instincts there where I think that he still does things that he knows will get heat, but it's not good heat, which is an argument I get to all the time with people. What is good heat? And it just needs to show more restraint. It needs to stop, slow down, think a little bit more. I don't know that about in-ring. In-ring, he's fine. When he's not talking or booking, he's very, very good. And he's great when he's talking, but things slip and, you know, the whole four pillars, I haven't thought the promo work has been very strong. I haven't thought the booking has been very strong. I don't think the interest is very strong. I don't think the believability is very strong. I think betonline.com put out odds, 98% MJF retains this thing. Just a throwaway of a main event for Double or Nothing for me. And that's unfortunate, you know?
Yeah, and you were mentioning, you know, MJF, and I think what his problem is, he gets that cheap heat, and that's to where, you know, there's that heat, and then there's that cheap heat. He always likes to go that underhanded cheap heat, and to get the zinger, you know, and it's just,
well, and the thing
there's
is,
not that mystique.
When he comes out, people want to cheer him until he's like, you all are gay, or whatever the fuck he says, right? And it's weird, right? Because he has to go in on people to like remind him he's a heel sometimes. I've had a lot of fun with the whole debate of who's a better heel, Dominic Mysterio or MJF, because I'm decidedly on the Dominic Mysterio side. No part of Dominic Mysterio is going out there saying, I'm trying to entertain you and have some fun right now. Dominic Mysterio just comes out and is a snivelly little dweeb.
And everybody hates him.
And everybody hates him, right?
Yep.
Doesn't need it. I don't think he needs his dad. I think his dad elevated him to a point where he's a top heel, but I don't think he needs to work with his dad anymore. The guy's over. The guy gets it. Max has to. He's not picking a lane, you know? And to wit, as I'm just going in right now, when you don't have a defined, when your champion isn't a defined babyface or heel, you do no service to any babyface or heel that you put him into a program in, specifically babyfaces. Because if you're trying to treat him like he's a heel, you want him to go in there with Jack Perry and Darby Allin. Guess what? The fans are going to cheer MJF over them because they like MJF. And then it makes it harder for your babyfaces to get over and become draws and make you money, right? And it is fine. MJF is great. But is the character of MJF helping to get anybody else around him over? I don't know. I think the jury is out for me very much on that one.
Yeah, definitely. Now we're talking about AEW with Nick Hausman of houseofwrestling.com with Premier Streaming Network. Don't forget about that. You attend a lot of I don't know you want to speak about this, but you attend a lot of the media scrums, and you were subject to a little bit of scrutiny by one Mr. CM Punk. Tell us what you were kind of thinking in that moment, and kind of tell us kind of what kind of preceded that. I don't know if you want to speak on that or.
Well, yeah, what preceded it was, you know, months of speculation about locker room politics involving Punk and or Cabana and or the Elite or Tony Khan. You know, a lot of people saw what happened at All Out, and you got to remember there were like several pay-per-views that had gone by where these kind of pay-per-views, press conferences, media calls where I had asked about this particular story. And as this was going on too, you got to remember the Hangman Page had gone out and made that comment and pissed Punk off about, you know, how your people don't like you legitimately in the back. And then that wasn't dealt with well internally. And then you get Punk calling out Hangman Page. So like, there's all these things that happened before the AEW All Out media scrum. So what happened at the scrum was the culmination of months of frustration on behalf of a guy in Punk who had felt kind of tethered to not be able to address a situation that he was obviously being asked about or talked about every single day about, right? Punk didn't do a whole, I mean, the emotions were very much there, but he did not do due diligence in finding out if I was still friends with Scott Colton. He did not do due diligence in reaching out to Dave Meltzer's camp, from what I gather, and asking who the source was for their reporting on Cabana. I think those parts of his press conference that admittedly on his end, as he would say, did not go well, blew his spot, I think is what he said to me. So those could have been avoided. The other stuff, the internal politics stuff, the things closer to the rod of the tree, that was all still very much from the heart. And I think exactly how he was feeling in that moment. As far as how I felt in that moment, I thought it was I thought it was wild, man. I was like, this is the coolest shit ever. I'm right front row. Like, as soon as I realized where he was going with it, I was like, oh, this man, dude, he doesn't know, man. He doesn't know that I'm not friends with Scott anymore. Oh, this is going to be bad. It's like I'm watching it in slow motion. I'm watching it in real time. And then he asked me if I'm friends. I'm like, nah, man, I'm not good. And I've been on good terms with Scott for a while. And he's just like, oh, fuck.
Strike one.
God. And then from then on out, yeah, man, I just got a front row to history. You know, I'm there to document. I'm there to watch and observe and relate to people and ask about all the stuff that you guys are hearing about in the sheets or on websites and bring that to the attention of the influential people and get them to comment on it. And if they're involved in it and I get them to comment it, 10 points, all the better. This one was like ding, 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 jackpot. The coins start slipping into the streets of Las Vegas. It was like, oh, I don't have a big enough sack to carry all these coins home.
Yeah, you're taking it to the bank and right.
Chaos. So I feel bad for everybody involved. Right. It was a bad night for everybody but Nick Hausman. I walked away. Everybody knows who I am a little bit better now. I get asked about it. I have people in random places tell me or jokingly say that, oh man, you killed AEW. And it's not true. AEW is maybe gonna get $1 billion TV deal here in about seven days. They are alive and well. Nick Hausman did not kill AEW. Let me make that very, very clear. It was a fun day at the office. I called my wife afterwards, and she was dealing with something I forget. And I was like, oh, well, let's just talk about that. And so I wound up talking to her about something. And then the next morning she woke up and she saw all this stuff and she's like, wait, what did you do last night? I'm like, this punk thing. I was like, I'm sorry, you were dealing with, so I didn't want to break it up. And I won a lot of good husband points with that one. She's like, you put my emotion before you probably could have just talked to me. All I was like, man, I don't care.
No,
whatever. Anyway, rambling now. Nick's
no,
left.
That's
Nick's
perfect.
Left, you know,
no, that's okay. Besides the AEW thing, what has been the strangest thing you have encountered as your time as a wrestling journalist or, you know, as a fan? Something that you personally have encountered, you know, it could have been on the indies while you're, you know, doing your journalist.
The strangest thing I've encountered in pro wrestling journalism, the strangest, funniest thing ever. Me and my buddy Taylor were at C2E2 in Chicago, big comic con for anybody who doesn't know what C2E2 is. And I always get a media badge for C2E2. I have for years. They let me come in. I usually walk around. I go to the booths where there's wrestlers. Headlocked Comics always has a bunch of wrestlers.
Yep.
This is just, by the way, anybody who wants to be a pro wrestling journalist, whatever that is, if you want to do whatever it is that I do, apply to the local comic cons. Show up with a little Zoom recorder. Mine's in this drawer down here. Little microphone. You got your press badge. You can just walk up to the booths and be like, hey, do you mind if I could get some time? If they're busy, they might ask you to come back later. Mm-hmm. If they're free, depending, like if it's Virgil, maybe you're going to get an hour. Who knows? But if they're available, you could get some more time. And then sometimes you're going to get told when you go to these comic cons, sorry, kid, I don't do press. Right. So then there was Honky Tonk Man. So I and Taylor he's got the camera. I've got the mic. We're walking around. We're getting interviews with different wrestlers at their different little booths. We go over to Honky Tonk and he's like signing like an autograph. And it's not like he has a line. He's like one person and he's like taking his sweet ass time talking to him and like writing it out. And he sees us, right? Like waiting, like, oh, you know, we're gonna wait over here. Like, we're not trying to ask him, whatever, but we're waiting. And then fan leaves, he's standing there and we walk over. And I'm like, hey, I'm Nick. I'm with, I think it was with WrestleZone at the time. This is Taylor's my camera guy. I was just wondering if I could get a little bit of your time, just talk a little bit about your career and talk about the con. And he looks at me, he's like, man, I did the first. One second. He goes,
you got to get that honky tonk going.
I'm sorry. I haven't done this impression in years. It's my favorite. I love this. So he goes, looks at me, he goes, man, I had the first pro wrestling podcast ever. I did 10 million listens out of my basement. Boom. Suck it. And then we were both like, we both stood there like, what? And then he just turned around and he just like started texting and we just kind of walked away. And it was like the most dickish.
Very random.
Like, and he was so cocky. And we were both like, we've never heard of his podcast or whatever the fuck.
10 million views. That's historical.
Yeah. First, I don't know why more people don't know this. Honky Tonk Man invented pro wrestling podcasting. Oh my God.
I mean, I thought it was Scott Colton, but I was wrong. Honky Tonk Man invented pro wrestling podcast.
Jerry Lawler's legitimate cousin, Honky Tonk Man.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Pro wrestling podcasting. And I, to this day, will occasionally, when like I make a point or I'm kind of drunk, I'll be like, yeah, man, you kicked his ass. Boom, suck it. I'll still say
oh, that's awesome.
I do boom suck it to this day because of Honky Tonk Man. So there you go.
Honky has the most. I've never met the guy, but I hear stories. Him and Virgil, I hear the most stories
I was there the night in Milwaukee, the night after the GLCW Blizzard Brawl. I didn't see it. I woke up the next morning to all these stories about it. But I think him and Brian Christopher got into like a scuffle, and then Honky like was blackout drunk and like walked over to the Hotel Planter and like pissed in it. And like, and I'm waking up the next day. And everyone's talking about it, like, oh, did you see Honky, man? He fucking dropped trash, he's pissing that fuck. I'm like, I missed it.
That's excellent.
Weird shit, man. All those weird indie road stories, man. There's just a million of them.
So I kind of have a similar story with none other than Scott Colton. He has a towel around him at the Rock Island Masonic Temple, and he did an IWA Mid-South show with No Limits Wrestling. Kind of did a similar thing. He had a towel around. He's waving to the cars going by. I'm like, what is he doing out there? Like, just random stuff at the Independence. It's just.
My favorite, it's a story of my friends, and I won't say the name of the WWE star who did this, but drunkenly I'm told that they threw a cinder block through a glass window to access the jacuzzi that was closed after hours at a hotel. What a great story. I wish it was mine. It's not.
That is awesome. I have a similar one there. It's not my story, but a wrestler. I'm not going to say who it is because he was throwing chairs off of the balcony into the pool, chanting ECW, ECW. Yeah,
they're fucking
he's in AEW right now, but we're not going to.
I mean, before all the punk stuff and mm-hmm. I mean, I've done a couple things here and there over the years that have gotten attention. The thing that got me a lot of attention for a while in pro wrestling is I was managing Jay Bradley in a match against Sean Waltman. And Sean went to hit the Bronco Buster on Jay, and Jay rolled out of the way, and whoever put the ring together, it wasn't me, didn't wrap the turnbuckle, and Sean like crotch first into like a metal turnbuckle and split his taint in half. And like infamously like split his taint in half, and like he rolls out of the ring. You know, and I run over to him, and I'm in my suit. We're in like the outfield of the Joliet Jackhammers baseball mm-hmm. minor league baseball stadium, and I'm seeing him, and he's like, he looks visibly in pain. And I kind of like I throw a fake kick, you know, and then I get all close to him in the face, like I'm gonna kind of like hit him, and I'm like,
yeah.
I was like, dude, are you okay? And he looks at me, and goes, Nick, I fucking tore my asshole in half. I was like, the fuck? And he's like, just keep kicking me. I need a moment. Keep kicking me. And I'm like, okay. And like, that's the weirdest thing I've ever done for a friend is just like threw fake kicks at them while they like let their taint kind of bleed out. Whatever. After that show, he asked me if I would hold a towel in between his butt cheeks to collect the blood.
To collect the blood. Oh.
And I told him
that's a good friend right there.
I didn't.
That is a great friend.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
Oh.
And it was whatever. We're still good friends. I went on to co-host this podcast.
That's a tip for you young wrestlers. Learn how to put the ring up correctly and make sure your stars do not get injured.
That little stuff.
That's a
man.
Freak accident, man.
That dude, the pro wrestling ring. You know, it looks just like a gym, like a discovery zone. You're just gonna get in there. Mm-hmm, you're gonna jump up and down. It's padded. It's jumpy. Whatever. You get messed up, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Cash Wheeler, man, I've never gone and watched that footage. I know what happened there. Mm-hmm, no, thank you. That is terrifying. We wouldn't even at Blitz let people get into the ring to take photos because if they tripped, because like you got to put one foot into the ring, then you got to take the other foot. You got to go between the ropes. And if you don't know how high to put your leg or you're whatever, stupid, you don't stretch, you trip on the rope, you fall, land on your head all of a sudden. Indie Wrestling League out of business because
that company is liable. Yep.
Right. You know, so we would do ringside photos. Like even the act of getting into the ring is dangerous. It is daunting. I don't think enough fans really comprehend how wild it is that these people do what they do. It is very, 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 very difficult and dangerous, exceptionally dangerous. Yeah.
I mean, you speaking about, you know, rings, you know, people thinking that the rings are, you know, bouncy houses and playing around. We in the Muscatine Armory, they actually had a boxing ring and they had a match, you know, spill into the boxing ring. And it the difference between, you know, a professional wrestling ring and then the boxing ring, it's just, wow, night and day. I don't know if you've, you know, kind of worked in a boxing ring, but.
I've never worked a boxer. I've taken a choke slam on a wooden stage with no give, and that was actually one of the cleaner bumps I've ever taken. Didn't really hurt that much. I was a younger man, you know, but I was fine with it. I kind of balled myself up. I hit, fell flat, worked good.
Yeah.
Worst choke slam bump I ever took was in a padded ring, and that's just because actually the same dude who hit me on that one picked me up by my belt and just dropped me. I dropped like a dirt straight down, head on my head, knocked myself out clean, blackout.
Oh,
it was rough, man. It's scary.
Those were the days. You're thinking about it now and you're just like, oh, I've got a headache just thinking about it. You know,
I do get headaches all the time. I think I have CTE.
Yeah. Oh god. Oh, and we're talking with Nick Hausman of House of Wrestling. Oh, excellent. Nick, I want to thank you again for coming on tonight. I know we've had technical issues with the other Nick Bull. Is there anything you want to plug? I know you've got houseofwrestling.com. The floor is yours. Plug away.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much, Stripes, for having me. Nick, the ghost of Nick, thanks for having me. And also, I don't want anybody to think I was making light of CTE. I might have CTE because I have had several concussions. Mm-hmm. That's why I joke about it, because as a comedian, what makes you feel emotionally ill, you have to laugh about. I am Nick Hausman, houseofwrestling.com, HAUS. That's how I spell my last name, HAUS of wrestling.com. Go check it out. I am posting new news all throughout the week. Just today, big exclusive. I was talking to legendary pro wrestling promoter, agent, trainer, whatever you want to call him, Rick Bassman. He was backstage at Backlash. He's also the guy who found Sting at a gym in California. I asked him about Sting's retirement. He also works with Goldberg. And then he spilled the beans to me. He said he's working on a match for September in Jerusalem that's going to have both Goldberg and Sting. Or he's working on a show. He wasn't specific about whether they'd both be on the match. But anyway, it's making waves, folks. And it started at House of Wrestling. Awesome. We got a podcast, House of Wrestling, on all your podcast feeds. Check us out on Premier Streaming Network. I do one interview a week for Inside the Ropes, the biggest UK outlet. This week, I chatted with Bobby Fish. And spoiler alert, next week, I'm chatting with Mojo Rawley. So there you go. I hadn't broken that anywhere else. A little bit of news here for you here on the show, Stripes.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Mojo was basically the ambassador to Saudi Arabia for WWE. He's also been traveling the world with Mercedes Moné. So we're going to hear all about what's going on with him next week on Inside the Ropes after I talk with him. And that's it, man. Here's the point where everybody just tunes out. I could be like, I have shirts with Satan's big red penis in honor of Marcus Crane being so. Actually, now I've got your attention. I don't have those shirts. Maybe I should, though. Just a couple Marcus shirts, right? Big red.
That'd
dick.
Be awesome. Yeah.
Devil's big red dick shirts. You know?
Very cool. Again, thank you to Nick for coming on to Card Subject to Change. This was episode 50, and you guys have a great evening. Thank you very much.